Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a man that is pissed off. He is pissed off because you have something that he wants, and his name is Jeff Schwartz. Jeff, what's happening?
Good morning. Happy, I guess, official week after football's over. No football this past weekend, and we all survived, and I'm glad to be here to talk with you. And yeah, I am. You know, I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I see all these videos and pictures of snow. And I don't ask for a lot, but my kids want some snow. I just want a little bit of snow. I'm a little peeved that we didn't get. We all we got was freezing rain all weekend. No snow. I just want a little bit of snow, man. It's not hard to ask for.
This is going to sound like a dumb question because I live in Southern California. What's the difference between freezing rain and snow? I thought that's what freezing rain was.
Freezing rain is not snow. It doesn't stick on the ground and it's miserable. It just. What?
Well, for Christ's sake, we don't take it out of me. I'm asking the question because we're not used to it out here.
I played a game of freezing rain once. Oh, my God. It's just miserable. It was miserable. It's just imagine rain, but it's basically frozen. It's ice. It just pelts you in the face all day when you walk outside. No, I mean, but to be fair, though, I just wanted a little bit of snow, like an inch or two, so we could get back to real life. Like, I just wanted like my kids to enjoy President's Day with a little bit of snow. To not have this miserable rain, and you know, I got buddies like in Dallas are sending me pictures of snow
buried.
And stuff.
They're
and,
getting buried.
But just to be fair though, I didn't want like 6 inches of snow because then the city shuts down. I was being very picky. I was very picky and just wanting 1 or 2 inches of snow just to have the kids have some fun. The adults to be like, look, it's snowing. How cool is this? I'm from Southern California, right? I've been in snow like 4 times in my life. I want just a little bit of snow because the freezing rain is fun for nobody.
Yeah, there's been some videos. You see the video in Nashville of the truck that just slides down the street?
Yeah, no one wants that.
Yeah.
But yes, I get it. Like this, you know, the streets aren't treated. My city, they don't have a bunch of you know, supplies to treat all the streets. They have like pickle juice and sand. That's the thing that the city of Charlotte uses, pickle juice and sand.
What does your street have cramps? What is pickle juice?
I think the salt in it helps. It's probably cheaper than buying like salt. I don't know. I was told we use pickle juice in our city. So, please, someone call in and correct me or tweet me about that.
There's a shortage of Vlasics at the local supermarket so people can get rid of the icy roads.
So yeah, man, I just like I see now. I feel obviously for people that don't have power, anything like that. I didn't want that, but just, you know, I was like, oh man, look, it's the weekend and it would have been nice to have, because, you know, free again, like you can't do anything in the freezing rain. You can't go outside. You can't go to the park. You can't, with the snow, you just play outside in the snow. Like you can go outside and hang out. So that's what I'm a little upset about.
But. Now, let me ask you this. Jeff Schwartz, Jonas Knox, in for Clay Travis here. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio. Many of you across the country, we hope you are safe. We know the weather is brutal in lots of places across the country, the winter storm and all that stuff that's being impacted. As a football player, worst conditions to play in. Absolutely worst condition. Because I've talked to quarterbacks about this. They'll tell you, we can deal with the rain. We can deal with the snow. It's the wind the we wind don't want to deal with. Yeah. So as a player, as an offensive lineman, worst conditions to deal with is on the football field.
Yeah, the freezing rain. It sucks because it's cold. Okay, so I played one game in my career where we had snow that turned to freezing rain. So we were in D.C. It was 2013. I was on the Chiefs. We beat Washington. It was like 56-10. Like we kicked their butts. And we were up like 35-7 at halftime. There's a cool picture if you Google the game. When we come back from the third quarter, and there might be 1,000 fans at FedEx Field. Like everyone was gone. But the first half was played in snow, a little kind of like trace amount of snow. And the second half was just freezing rain. And the second half was so miserable because, again, like you don't want, you know, is you're on the sideline just kind of in between drives, just this freezing rain just pelting you in the face the entire time. And here's the thing about the cold. The cold really sucks when you're warming up before a game. it sucks in between drives. But when you're playing, it's not bad. When you're playing, you know, you're warm because your body temperature's up as you're moving it around. And so the freezing rain, though, is like the worst of everything. It's cold, so your body, you know, it's cold on the sidelines. And then you just feel miserable because it's pelting you in the face with rain. That's the worst. And you're right. The wind for us as linemen doesn't matter. But the wind for quarterbacks, they'll tell you all the time, that's the issue. And we see, too, with snow games, especially games that we expected snow starting like on Monday, right, for a Sunday game, you know, the point totals are always low. And they always go over because you can still score when there's snow, especially if you have a strong arm quarterback. It's the wind that's the problem.
Yeah, and speaking of the wind and speaking of quarterbacks, Jeff Schwartz, Carson Wentz, all right? Carson Wentz, once thought to be the franchise quarterback, potential future Hall of Famer, would-be MVP back in 2017. Carson Wentz is on the trade block. The Philadelphia Eagles would like to move on from Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz would like to move on from the Philadelphia Eagles. And according to Albert Breer, who joined Colin Cowherd, heard on many of these Fox Sports Radio affiliates, yesterday, Carson Wentz, right now the leader in the clubhouse, the favorite to land Carson Wentz, are the Chicago Bears. And so when we talk about wind and we talk about how wind affects a quarterback, maybe that's why Carson Wentz isn't too hot on the idea of going to Chicago, because according to Albert Breer, he'd prefer to go to Indianapolis. So here we are waiting for Carson Wentz and a deal to get done, and nothing has happened as of yet. And the Bears are hoping they can convince him that that's the place, that's the destination ultimately that offers up the best package for Philadelphia and that Carson Wentz can end up at.
I laugh because why does he think he has a say? I mean, he might have a say, you know, contractually. I don't know if he has a no-trade clause. But, dude, you are not good right now. You don't have a say in where you go. You go to where the Eagles find you, a home for you. Like, you don't get to tell them where you're going now. Again, he might have a no-trade clause. So I don't know. I can look that up. Not everyone in, you know, it's not like the NBA or baseball where a bunch of guys have no-trade clauses. You don't get to choose where you go, buddy. The Eagles are going to find the best trade value for you, and you're gone. And you're gone because you suck. And you're gone because you haven't been able to perform well. And you're gone because clearly there's some issues with getting along with your teammates. You had issues, obviously, with your coach, who ended up being fired. And that's the funny thing. Is like they fired Doug Peterson because I think he couldn't get along with Carson Wentz, right? He couldn't get Carson Wentz to be better. We saw that Carson Wentz got worse as the seasons went on from when he got hurt in 2017. They got rid of Doug Peterson for him, and now he wants to go too. Look, I thought they brought in someone to help fix you. So you don't get to stay, buddy. They're gonna trade you where they want to go. The gall on him, man. Look, I get it. He's an NFL quarterback. He wants to say what he's gonna say, but dude, just be happy that you're gone.
Yeah. And also, look, the Bears aren't a great situation. It's not a place that's had the best history when it comes to quarterbacks. But there are a lot worse situations he could be traded to, right? I mean, there's a lot worse teams and worse spots in the NFL Carson Wentz could find himself than the Chicago Bears. The part that I've always found fascinating about this, and I would love to know the real story behind it, is what happened between him and Doug Peterson. Because I was under the impression Carson Wentz was gone, or that Doug Peterson was gone because the organization chose Carson Wentz.
So was I.
And now we find out, okay, so neither one of them are coming back, which makes me wonder if there's something more going on behind the scenes. Maybe there's an issue with the front office. I've heard some things about Howie Roseman, just that whole situation that Chip Kelly tried to tell some people about a long time ago, that he's got a lot more pull in the organization than people realized.
It is Howie's organization. Their new coach they hired was so shocked, I should say, to get an interview. He was on vacation. He had to interview in shorts and a t-shirt because he didn't expect to be interviewed. Like they hired someone who Howie can control.
Yeah, and that's how this is appearing to be, and it appears like they're turning the page on Carson Wentz. But man, I assumed, all right, Doug Peterson's gone. That means Carson Wentz is going to be here just based on the contract. And now they find themselves in this spot to where they're both going to be out the door. So it's going to be one of those situations where we're going to find out the truth later on and Howie Roseman and everything that goes along with his impact on all this. But it's like, man, we're talking about a guy who was an MVP. It's not like Carson Wentz isn't a talented guy. Breer was also saying in the interview with Colin Cowherd that the Bears feel like mechanically they can fix him, that they can work with him and they can try and help him and try and rebuild his confidence, because everyone agrees, you know, maybe a change of scenery is the best place for him to go. To me, there's an issue with Carson Wentz. I don't know if it's a mental thing. I don't know if it's the injuries that have been tallied up over the past several years. But there's more there than just the mechanics of Carson Wentz that's the problem.
So my concern with Carson is his mental state, right? So, you know, the reports out of Philly, and look, I know that people don't like anonymous sources. I know people think that people should put, you know, quotes on the record, but obviously that never happens. And
and
I think when you get enough stories, though, that are kind of the same rhythm, right? Like, hey, Carson Wentz is not a great teammate. Carson Wentz is this and that, and his confidence is waning, and he didn't like this decision by Doug Peterson, and he didn't like that they drafted Jalen Hurts. And when enough of these stories come out, they tend to be kind of true, right? And I've been told he has struggles with connecting with teammates, right? He's a North Dakota kid, kind of had a different upbringing than a lot of other players, and he just has trouble connecting with his teammates. He doesn't have shared life experiences with them. You add the religious part of it, and again, plenty of players in the locker room are religious. I'm Jewish. I've had great conversations with players about religion, and so that doesn't really affect a lot of players, but some players, some players maybe don't connect with their teammates because they're not as religious as them. And I think these are all things we've heard about Carson Wentz. And when you hear them enough from enough people, they kind of tend to be true, right? Look, another guy that I think people we've seen in the media kind of take a dump on is Aaron Rodgers, right? And that he's a bad teammate. But then we also have people on the other side saying, hey, he's a great teammate, right? Like, I've talked to many Packers who say all the stuff about Aaron Rodgers is nonsense. Have we had yet to see someone come out and defend Carson Wentz has played with him? No.
Here's the other part of this. So Adam Kaplan, who's in the Philadelphia area, he does work here on Fox Sports Radio. He's fantastic. But he's been covering the Eagles for years. And he said something over the weekend when I talked to him that I think is the most damning thing you could maybe say about a quarterback outside of he's a quitter. He said, look, he didn't like the fact that he was going to have to compete for his job. He didn't like that. He's a type A personality, and he didn't like the fact that he was going to have to compete for his job. And I said, do you know how bad that sounds? Because there's a couple of different ways that you can go down this road, okay? And if you brought up Aaron Rodgers, perfect example. The Packers did what the Eagles did, but even worse, because the Packers moved up in the draft in the first round to take a quarterback who was a raw talent. And Aaron Rodgers responded with, okay, F you, I'm going to go out and win the MVP, and I'm going to play my balls off until we get to a postseason game and things start to fall apart. But I'm going to give you one of the best seasons of my career, and I'm going to show you that you made a mistake by drafting this guy. Carson Wentz is competing with a guy who was taken a round later in Jalen Hurts. And now he wants out? Like, bro, that is the most damning thing you could say about a quarterback outside of just he quit on his team. It's terrible.
And you know, I was 7th round draft pick, so I always had to fight for everything in the NFL until about year 7 when I finally
I was taken a round later contract. Than you, by the way. I was taken
good.
In the 8th round, by
congrats.
The way.
Congrats. And so, like, I just don't get the mindset of not competing. I mean, that's the only way I made the NFL. The only way I made the NFL was competing each year for my job, and sometimes, each training camp practice, right? And so the idea of bringing in a player to replace you, that happened every year I was in the NFL. Him mentally breaking down because they draft a second round quarterback. Again, a second round quarterback. Look at the NFL right now. There are, I believe, 4 quarterbacks taken after like the top of the second round, because Drew Brees was technically like the second round, and he's obviously retiring, but that are like franchise type quarterbacks, right? Dak, Russell Wilson, Cousins, and Carr, who was drafted kind of at the end of the second round. I think those are the 4. And, 3 of those fell into jobs, right? Dak, Wilson, and Cousins. They weren't drafted to start. So if Carson Wentz was smart, but you know what? second round draft pick, Jalen Hurts. Yeah, you know, it's not really, you know, it's drafted kind of maybe to replace me, but maybe they want to use some him in packages. You know what? Screw that guy. I'm going to win the job. That's what most people think, right? Most people think, hey, I'm going to go out and show everyone that I deserve to have the starting spot. I'm going to be confident in myself because I know I'm the better player. Carson Wentz just folded. So if he goes anywhere else, let's say he goes to Chicago, or I think he ends up in Indy, but what happens if one of those teams drafts a quarterback in the draft this year? Just to have a backup, right?
Let's say
someone falls in the draft and Indy's like, you know what? Second round draft pick. Oh, Kyle Trask is here. You know what? Let's draft Kyle Trask. Is Carson Wentz gonna lose it again?
This is
what the job is. The job is they're always trying to find your Tom Brady. They get drafted as replacement every 3 years. And yeah, he might not like that Jimmy G was there, which we've heard, but he still won Super Bowls anyways. Like, yeah, Carson Wentz, suck it up, dude.
Yeah, it's bizarre. The whole thing is bizarre. But there is a March 10th. That's really where people look at is the deadline, March 10th, because that's when he is due his, I believe, $10 million that he is due by the Philadelphia Eagles. So the assumption is they'll get a deal done before March 10th. All right, he's Jeff Schwartz. I'm Jonas Knox. In for Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. By the way, if you want to piss Jeff Schwartz off and you are dealing with snow, send him a picture on Twitter. Twitter, @Jeff Schwartz, so he can just look and get jealous of all the white that he is not seeing in his streets, in his front yard.
Only a little bit of snow, though. I don't want like 6 inches, though, because then the city shuts down. I'm a very specific amount of snow I need in my life.
Beggars can't be choosers, Jeff. You got to take what you can get. So you can send those again @Jeff Schwartz on Twitter. All right, coming up next here on Fox Sports Radio and on Outkick the Coverage.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Coming up in a little over 5 minutes from now here on FSR, we are going to catch up with the Daytona 500 winner, Michael McDowell. So he will be stopping by. I want to live vicariously through Michael McDowell, Jeff Schwartz. I want to know what the hell it's like to win the Daytona 500. I want to know about the after party. I want to know about the lack of sleep. I also want to find out how real or how fake the movie Days of Thunder is. That's I got to know. Like, I have several questions to ask.
I want to know what... At what moment did he realize he won when the cars in front of him smashed into the wall? Like, did he realize it like right away? Was he just so focused on kind of escaping that and finishing the last lap? Because that's an ending that we haven't seen very often. So yeah. And also, I saw a tweet that said that Tony got pushed to Monday. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, this is like 8 o'clock on Sunday. I was like, oh, okay, well, this is over. I'm going to go to sleep. And then I wake up in the morning, and they obviously finished. So I'm kind of interested to find out, like, how they went from, hey, we're going to delay this till the next day, to, oh, we're finishing tonight.
Yeah, that was a crazy race, crazy ending. So we look forward to catching up with Michael McDowell, the Daytona 500 winner, again, coming up less than 5 minutes from now here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, so quickly, I wanted to mention this to you. Because I don't know if you know this or not, right? But you are working with somebody who actively rooted against you at least twice, all right? Now, you mentioned that you were a member of the Kansas City Chiefs back in the 2013 season. And I don't know if you know this or not, but Roberto, our technical producer, he is a diehard Raiders fan. In fact, he actually has a Derek Carr tattoo.
He doesn't even
have the jersey. He's just got Carr number 4 on his back tattooed in.
I feel very sorry for him.
That's a true story. So he is a diehard Raider fan. And then, as we're talking about the great Denver Bronco team that fell short in the Super Bowl, but the one that you you competed against, you got Justin Cooper, the executive producer. Yeah, I mean, diehard Bronco fan. He too has a tattoo. It's Osweiler on his back. So when you know that you're working with two guys who actively rooted for you to fail and probably would have celebrated had you suffered an injury in either of those games, how does that make you feel, Jeff Schwartz?
Well, specifically the Raiders. I mean, I was on the field for the game. Jamaal Charles scored 5 touchdowns in that dump they call the Coliseum.
You bastard.
So I have no qualms with the Raiders, even though trolling the Raider fans on Twitter is one of my favorite things of all. There's this guy who just like he you know, like people weirdly attack me. They're like, you only played 8 years. They're like, you were a bum. You didn't make any money. I was like, okay. like that's a Raider fan saying to me. You were just some scrub who played 8 years. Okay, great enough. Broncos fans, not as fierce on the social media. I don't really get in. I've never really had a deal with Broncos fans. They haven't been good in quite a while.
It's because we're smart fans.
Oh,
that's right. You're smart fans.
Hey, Roberto, you know what that is, don't you? There's a drop for that in the system. You know what that is? He's basically calling. He's saying that Raider fans are dumb, and you know why that is.
I mean, is there any question? Is that like a question, or is that?
You said it. You know, from
the statement of fact
from your mouth to God's ears.
Raiders fans are just like. I mean, you would have thought when they beat the Chiefs in October, they should just put a banner up at that new stadium, been like October Super Bowl champs.
Here are intelligent Bronco fans.
They're drafting of Robert Nickim.
Intelligent Bronco fans.
Coop, is that you trying to pronounce Robert Kimdiche?
Look, yes. It was very early.
Intelligent Bronco fans.
That is brilliant. That, you know what, though? I'm sure there was a lot of people that butchered that. By the way, he's the guy who fell out of the window, right? He got so high he fell out of the window.
Yes.
Seriously, what kind of weed are you?
What an amateur!
That was Coop.
Honest to God, like what kind of weed are you smoking that you think you're the dragon from Games of Thrones? Like, what are you doing?
He was that. He was in that Mississippi class that was like went from 100 the year before to number one.
Laquan Treadwell.
Yeah, and everyone was like, they're probably cheating. Guess what? They were. So, you get like three of the top five players like in one season. I randomly. All of a sudden, like, they were cheating. Yeah,
yeah.
makes sense. Yeah, he was supposed to be. He kind of ended up being a flameout in the NFL.
Because he got taken by Arizona. Yeah. I think he went to Arizona.
He dropped a little bit. Yeah,
out. Yeah. But that was a wild story. I think he just jumped out of a like the first floor of the second story of a building or something. It was crazy. Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz here in for Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio from the Farmers Outkick Studios. Call 1-888-FARM. And you could save a whole lot of something on auto insurance. Coming up here 15 minutes from now, bad news. One individual in the NFL that a lot of people disliked. Apparently, he's not that bad at all. So we will get to that here 15 minutes from now. Right now, though, we welcome in the Daytona 500 winner, Michael McDowell, with us here on Fox Sports Radio. Michael, Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're good. First of all, what the hell has the last 48 hours been like for you?
No sleep and just a unbelievable range of emotions, you know. It's obviously so cool to win the Daytona 500 and all the things that come with it. And, you know, you just go from that just raw, overjoyed excitement, just don't even know how to express it, to just a super grateful and thankful and just very humbling. And then you go into sleep deprivation and now you're dragging a little bit. It's going to be getting that energy up today for sure.
I'm sure you dreamed about this moment forever. Did it feel exactly like you thought it would or hoped it would, or was it even better?
It's better. And I think what made it better is just the journey to get here, you know, and all the people that have helped you get here. And, you know, just there's so many critical, you know, moments in your career where, you know, that next opportunity or, you know, the next partner that allowed you to do this and that. And, you know, in motorsports, it's so different than stick and ball sports. And so there's so many people that help you get to this level, and it's, you know, like I said, super humbling to know that, you know, people made a lot of sacrifice for you to have this opportunity.
Michael McDowell, Daytona 500 winner, with us here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz, in for Clay Travis here on Outkick the Coverage. So when did you realize I'm going to win the Daytona 500 because you're sitting, you're behind a couple of cars. Then we see this fiery crash. I know probably when you were dreaming about this as a kid, I would imagine, you know, wire to wire winner, total domination, you know, hand out the window because you got like a 40 car separation between you and number two as you cross the finish line. And then it plays out like this. When did you realize, oh my God, I'm going to win the Daytona 500?
You know, it's funny. When you dream as a kid, you're probably right. That's what it looks like. But as I've been dreaming as an adult that has been in the sport a long time of what it would look like, it sure did look a lot like how I thought it was going to play out. And you know, I had a plan, and plans are hard to come up with at Daytona. They're hard to stick to. But my strategy, I should say, was to be in that top three coming to the white flag. And to be pushing somebody to the lead. And the reason that is that, you know, just watching these races over and over, very rarely is it the leader that's going to win the race coming to the white flag. And I wanted to be in position that I could push a fast car to get them side by side and then make a move. And it didn't work out exactly how I thought it was going to, but it was pretty close. I was hooked up to Brad Keselowski's bumper. We had a big run on Joey Logano. I knew he was going to make a move. And he tried to make a move, and Joey blocked it, and they got together, and the seas parted, and I drove right through the middle. And, you know, just thankful to be in that spot, you know, coming to the white flag. And like I said, I had a plan, and I felt like we were executing that plan really well, and everything went just right at the end.
What makes it such a tough track, especially lately? There's a lot more accidents lately, a lot more crashes, a lot more lead changes at the end of these races at Daytona. What makes this such a difficult track?
Well, I think that two things that stand out to me in particular, you know, I've been in the Cup Series for 13 years now, and the cars at Daytona are harder to drive now than ever. They're rough. They're very sketchy. The cars move around a lot, which has made the racing, really exciting. And then the drivers are so good and they're so aggressive. And I think that the aggression and the cars, you know, the cars are just so trimmed out, and the teams do such a good job of trying to find every last ounce of speed that the cars are hard to drive. And so when they're hard to drive and hard to hang on to, and you got people pushing on your bumpers the entire time, you know, there's bound to be an accident. And it's exciting racing, and we all know what it is when we go to Daytona. If you can make it through those big crashes, you know, you have a shot at it. But the aggression, you know, just stays up the entire time, and that's why you see so many accidents. But it's also why you see great racing.
Michael McDowell, Daytona 500 winner, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay Travis here on Outkick the Coverage. So I think it's always fascinating how do different people celebrate. So there's a UFC fighter named Max Holloway, and he's one of the best featherweight fighters probably of all time. Tradition for him after he wins a fight, he always has cupcakes. For whatever reason, that's just his thing. So you win the Daytona 500, 99.9% of us, almost all of us listening here on Fox Sports Radio right now, all across the country, will never get to the place that you got on Sunday night into Monday morning. So what is the after party like? How do you celebrate winning the Daytona 500 after all that went into just your preparation that week?
Man, this is going to really let you guys down, and I'm sorry, but I want to be truthful with you. You know, after I got done with, you know, Victory Lane and media, it was about 2:30 in the morning. And then from there, I went and saw, you know, my guys. They were going through tech, and tech inspection is where they just make sure that your car's not illegal, and they measure every part piece. They pull the motor out. And for me, you know, I want to make sure that thing passes tech, because you're not the winner until they say you're the winner. And so I hung around during that tech process till 5:30 in the morning. And so the sun was coming up in Daytona Beach, and I went to IHOP and I got a little breakfast, and then I went to the motorhome, and I took a quick shower, and I talked to my wife and kids before they went to school. And then I headed to the media center and started, started media day again. So how I celebrated was no sleep, IHOP breakfast and watching my car go through tech. I celebrate my victories with omelets.
There you go. Well done.
I celebrate everything with food, so I understand. I understand what you feel. So there was a long and lengthy rain delay. We saw drivers. I think these were accurate tweets. You know, we saw one going to Panda Express. We saw one at Waffle House. How do you get to leave and make it back in time? I'm just shocked about that. But two, how did you spend your rain delay?
Well, I don't know how those guys did it either. I'm always super nervous to leave the racetrack. Like, they're not going to let me back in, you know?
Exactly. Traffic.
So even if I was hungry, I'm not sure I'd have left the facility. But, it was a lot of rain, I'll say that. So, in our sport, obviously, being outside and you got to race on a dry racetrack, we know, when you get a downpour that it's going to be at least 2 hours, maybe 3 hours. So we kind of know the windows. But I get super anxious. I don't want to miss a race because I was outside the racetrack and couldn't get back in. So I think I had a peanut butter sandwich in the motorhome and a banana, and so I didn't get any of the nice takeout. But I didn't leave the facility because that makes me nervous.
Well, and plus, who wants to eat fast food before you got to sit in a car, man? I would fall asleep. I swear to God, I try to eat as little as possible when I've got to drive somewhere.
It's those 20-year-old kids that are drinking all the energy drinks. That's how they're doing it.
That's true. That is a good point. All right, Michael, last one before we let you go. You need to do me a favor. Because one of my just bear with me on this, all right? Because I'm really interested about this. Michael McDowell, Daytona 500 winner. How realistic is the movie Days of Thunder?
80%. I mean, there's some Hollywood elements into it. But, it's one of the greatest motorsports movies ever
made.
Thank
you.
I mean, they just can't even recreate it. Nothing's been even close to it, and it's been probably, 20 years?
Yeah, it's probably longer than that. I think it's closer to 30 years. But I've always wondered that because there are some people who spoke ill of it and said, that's not realistic and that's not how things would go. But I've always wondered, all right, I want to ask a driver, how realistic is the movie? So you're saying it's as realistic as they could possibly make it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, good. See, Jeff? We accomplished it. All right. Now we feel good. All right. He is Michael McDowell, Daytona 500 winner, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Get him on Twitter, @Mick_driver. Michael, congratulations, man. Your life changed on Sunday night into Monday morning. And I know you didn't get to celebrate maybe the way some people thought you would, but you'll be celebrating for the rest of your life. You are a Daytona 500 winner. We're happy for you. You seem like a good dude, man. Congrats on all your success.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz here on Fox Sports Radio.
I gotta say, man, if I had Panda Express before I got into a race car, I mean, having a poop attack while you're driving doesn't feel like something I want.
All that MSG, man, go to sleep.
It's over, man. It is over. I couldn't do it. I don't know how people do it. It's crazy. I can't eat before shows. So I'm like, I just feel sluggish. I feel like I don't know how they were doing.
Not to mention the need for the bathroom.
I'm eating right now.
Me too.
I'm not eating right now. That's not a problem when I'm doing radio. Problem is when you're driving in a car. I mean, I just feel like that'd be a little tough.
Yeah, it would be tough. All right, Jeff Schwartz, Jonas Knox, in for Clay Travis. This is from the Farmers Insurance Outkick Studios. By the way, continue to send those snow pictures into Jeff so he can live vicariously through you.
I've decided I'm over snow. Some of these pictures are bothering me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not pretty out there. There's a lot of people dealing with some difficult situations. And all you're asking for is a couple inches of snow. But unfortunately, you can't have everything.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Jeff Schwartz, the hell's happening, my friend?
I'm glad to be here. I'm excited to talk about this next topic, by the way, because I don't know if I like this player yet. I haven't figured out yet whether or not I like him, and so this will be a lot of fun to discuss. But how'd you spend, by the way, how'd you spend your first weekend without football? I did not know that fan-controlled football is a thing. I learned about it this weekend. I'm not sure.
Is that the Manziel League?
Yeah, it's called fan-controlled football. It's one of my favorite traditions of the first weekend after football's over is there's a new league that pops up. I often have no idea it's happening. I see highlights. I think to myself, oh, I'm going to pay attention to this, and I just don't because I don't want to get divorced. So I have to spend my non-football days in a certain way. How did you spend your first weekend without football?
I mean, I dabbled in a little college basketball. I turned that on. I watched the Penguins Capitals game. Then I watched a little Daytona 500. I just kind of mixed and matched and kind of channel surfed a little bit, you know, just kind of looked around. And then I realized none of this is anything close to the NFL. And then I started, I was jonesing for some XFL, maybe a little AAF if need be. Like, I need something. Although we are going to have spring college football, though. I mean, that is going to be happening.
And
so that'll
be fun. We did have a little bit of it. We had McNeese State play someone this weekend. I don't even know who it was, like Tennessee Tech or something. So we have FCS coming up. And it's good football, right? I mean, a lot of these, you know, North Dakota State, Weber State, Maine and James Madison. I mean, there's some good football that's going to happen. The thing about basketball for me, college basketball, you know, there's no, and I follow the Pac-12 from my job, and I'm a West Coast kid. And by the way, 3-0 gambling Pac-12 this weekend. It's good to follow. You know, the conference you follow is the best one to gamble on because you follow them, you know, very closely. The thing with college basketball is there's just not a lot of stars, right? There's not a lot of like, oh my God, I have to watch Zion Williamson play. There's no one really that I feel that way about. I mean, the USC has Evan Mobley, you know, who's 7 feet tall and he'll be a lottery pick. I mean, he's one you want to watch, but he's not as the star power of Zion is not there. And the NBA, at least for me, and I like all the sports, and it's tougher on the East Coast to stay up and watch like West Coast basketball as I'm a Lakers fan. But, you know, the concern is that, does it matter what happens now? Because all that matters is the playoffs. Right? Anthony Davis is hurt for the Lakers, and I'd argue that they should sit him as long as they can as a Lakers fan, have LeBron rest. But Lakers can be any seed, 1 through 8, and they'll be the favorite to win the championship.
Yeah.
And the favorite to win the West. So I feel like the NBA is watered down in the regular season. Like, it doesn't matter what happens right now.
Yeah, and look, a lot of that is the 7-game series format because the best team is going to win every time. And so you don't have these situations. Look, if Kansas City and Tampa Bay played 7 games, how do you think that goes? If the Bucks and the Chiefs played a 7-game series, how do you think that goes?
Is everyone healthy, like, or at least relatively healthy?
Say they're the same rosters as they were in the Super Bowl. Same roster, same starting lineup that they were in the Super Bowl. They play 7 times. How do you have that?
I mean, Tampa would win most of those games because of the Chiefs' offensive line. I think you're looking like the Week 12 lineups.
Okay.
Week 12 lineups, but you know, but Tampa's playing at the caliber they're playing at now, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. They probably go 4-3.
Yeah. And because you'd have so many opportunities to play, it's like Kansas City, say they lose that Super Bowl and that's game one of the series, I would pick Kansas City to win game two.
Correct.
Because I would get, and so the NBA has this to where you can lose a game here or there in the postseason, but the best team is always going to win. So the element of surprise in the NBA just isn't there in the playoffs to where, you know, a team can come out and shock you. I mean, remember Allen Iverson and the Sixers? The Lakers were undefeated in the playoffs up until that point.
They won
that first game. But if that were the only game played in the NBA Finals, they would be your champions. It wasn't, which is what makes the NCAA tournament so much more fun to watch. It just, the 7-game series, I think, makes it really difficult for the surprise element in the NBA. Give them credit because the best team always wins, but you don't have that really fun, exciting storyline that you would normally get. So yeah, the Lakers would be favored regardless of what
season. But even a 5-game series, you have to have a 3-game series possibly. But then again, like if you're the Lakers, and we even saw it last year, and last year's hard to judge because it was a bubble, but we saw the Lakers, you know, just like not show up to game five against the Heat, right? It was just like, we're up 3-1. They just didn't play as hard, right? And then obviously game six, they just came in, they played their best, and they won easily. In a five-game series, you can still have that, right? You're up 2-0. And we often see that game three at home is kind of that bounce-back game, right, for the team that's down 0-2.
Yeah.
It's my favorite situation to bet first quarter, game three of an NBA playoff series. You take the underdog, right? Who's down to 0-2. It's every time. It's a great bet to make. First quarter, third game. and oh, the first man. Home, the first time they're at home in the playoff series. I'll do just like auto bet that all the time. So a three game series would make it more interesting, right? But in the end, I feel like the Lakers, for example. I mean, if even a three-game series, they'd just be like, all right, guys, let's just win two and be done with it. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's – and I like the NBA, like I said. But we're heading down the barrel to Lakers-Nets finals. We all know that, I feel like.
Yeah, and so it is tough to get worked up over anything in the NBA right now. But Draymond Green, Jeff Schwartz, is very, very bothered. He is very frustrated. He decided, you know what, man, I'm not happy about what's going on. I have a bone to pick with the National Basketball Association. This after the Warriors win over the Cavs on Monday night. And here was Draymond Green of the Warriors letting it fly after the game.
To watch Andre Drummond before the game sit on the sideline, then go to the back, and then come out in street clothes because a team is going to trade him. It's bullshit. But you can say Andre Drummond is getting traded publicly, and we're looking to trade him publicly, and he's to stay professional and just deal with it. But then when Kyrie Irving say, oh, my mental health is off, everybody go crazy about that too. Do you not think that affects someone mentally? As much as we put into this game to be great, to come out here and be in shape, to produce for fans every single night, and most importantly, to help your team win. Do you think that doesn't affect someone mentally? But as players, we're told to, no, you can't say that, you can't say this, but teams can? It goes along the same lines of when everyone wants to say, oh, man, that young guy can't figure it out. But no one wants to say the organization can't figure it out. At some point, the players must be respected in these situations, and it's ridiculous, and I'm sick of seeing it. Y'all have a great night. I'll see y'all tomorrow.
All right. I would like the first question, if I could. The hell's he talking about? I don't know what the hell he's talking about. I swear, I heard a lot. There was rambling there. He was very fired up. Players should be treated. But what is he talking about? I don't get it.
And what's interesting is I saw this on Twitter. I had not listened to it yet. And so I'm glad we played it. And it's so interesting how social media, the first thing they do is they're so pro-player, right?
Of course.
You tell them, Draymond. And I'm like, I'm glad I listened to it before I responded.
What did he tell anybody? I don't know what he's talking about. Yeah, I don't get it.
So it sounds like Andre Drummond is on the trading block, I guess. But again, guys, that's a media-driven thing. Maybe the team tells a media member, hey, we're about to trade him. But the team is not the one out there saying we're going to trade someone. The team is not publicly, most of the time, I mean, obviously not every time, publicly saying, hey, Andre, we're trading you. These rumors start in the media and they get told by the media. And so I don't know what he's talking about. As far as Kyrie,
I don't know how that has anything to do with Andre Drummond.
I mean, I understand that mental health is not taken seriously by pro sports organizations. I think they're trying to do a better job of it, but they don't take it seriously, especially when players retire. And so I understand what Draymond's saying there.
Agreed.
But again, it just kind of out of nowhere. It's just like a stream of conscious, like a stream of thought. And what was his last point on the young players don't develop? Guys, the media blasts teams all the time for not developing players. What's he talking about?
Yeah, I honest to God, man, I'm seeing. But this is exactly the point.
There was an article yesterday, by the way, on Chiefs about the Chiefs Twitter, blasting the Chiefs for not developing anyone from the 2018 draft class. They just won a Super Bowl 2 years ago, and they won the Super Bowl again, and people are like, oh, this 2018 right. draft class, Brett Veach didn't do a good job. It's like, Draymond, they constantly do that. What are you talking about?
But to your point, and you said, and this is the most important element of all this, it's the race to defend players on Twitter. It irritates me because you can listen to that and I saw the same thing you said. It's everybody lining up to see who can kiss the most ass. I swear, it's like an ass kissing race, and it wears me out, man. There's nothing wrong with saying, "Hey, look, we love what you guys do, but maybe you're not you're not right here." Like, there's nothing, but no, everybody wants to defend it. Yeah, you tell them, man. No league. Let's players have more power than the NBA does. So this idea that they're being, you know, held hostage in a way, and that their teams are able to do this, but players aren't able to do that. That is crazy, man.
You know what's interesting is, like, I'm not a business person. Like, I don't really have a business at all. I mean, my wife has some rental properties, but, like, we don't have a business. But, like, I find myself almost being, like, more pro-business because some of these athletes just say the most ridiculous stuff of all time. And so I feel like more like, hey, I get what the NFL owners are doing, or I get what the NBA owners, I guess NBA governors are doing. Like, I feel myself like I'm like almost less pro-player because some of these guys have no idea what they're saying. I have no idea what they're talking about. And I guess I have a different perspective, I maybe, but, like, I don't really understand why everything has to be pro-player. I saw Russell Wilson, and we talked about him a little earlier. He mentioned that, you know, players should be more in control of personnel decisions. That's a terrible idea.
Horrible.
And yet, everyone, Twitter's like, you tell him, Russell. You know, you get paid so much money, and in any other organization, the highest paying individuals, there's no organization like the NFL. There's no organization where the talent gets paid at such a higher level than like the people who run the organization, right? Like, in what organization are you in where the, you know, I guess in the media sometimes the talent gets paid maybe more than the executive does, but that's kind of rare. But the idea that, like, Russell Wilson's making $35 million a year and John Schneider, the GM, is making $5 million a year, therefore Russell Wilson should have more say in player personnel decisions. No. What does that even mean? Does it mean that they come to him and say, hey, we have Allen Robinson or Juju Smith-Schuster. Who do you want? Okay, that's fair, right? Russell,
yeah,
who do you like?
That's fine.
But again, they might have already chosen Allen Robinson, and Russell just says Allen Robinson, and they're like, great, and Russell feels involved, right? Because they took the guy that they already wanted anyways, right? It's like, that's how marriage works sometimes, right? Like, you tell the other person what they want to hear because you've already made your mind up, and you sort of know they have made their mind up too, and you both agree on it, and boom, done, right? Or is it, hey, Russell, are you studying left guards? Like, are you studying the draft? I mean, like, what does it mean you want more control of personnel? You have a tough enough job to do your own job. Now you want another job? And then do you also get fired if you don't do the other job well, too? Right? Like, where does it stop? Like, I don't understand why we rushed to be. And I'm a player. I'm a former player. I'm very much in love rights for players and name image like this. We talked about that, and, you know, having, you know, the say in what you control and everything. But the idea of player personnel, and then Twitter's like, great job, Russell, I agree with you. Like, what are you talking about?
I totally agree. And there's another element of this that I want to keep the discussion going on this, because it blows my mind the number of fanboys in the media that line up and want to defend players blindly. When it comes to topics like it's crazy to me.
Maybe because they want the access, I guess, and now social media is so
important. I don't know, man.
And I don't mind pissing people off, like players off, and I have. I mean, I don't. I have a couple friends. That's all I need in life.
Yeah, I don't. It's bizarre, but we will continue the discussion here. He's Jeff Schwartz. I'm Jonas Knox. In for Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. You can hang out with us, as always, on the iHeart Radio app.